Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Everybody, we are live for the UFC Vegas 54 post-fight show here on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. I am Mike Heck. We got AK Lee, and we have Jose Youngs, who is backstage in the media room in Las Vegas at the Apex. So we're going to begin with Jose. We don't have a lot of time with him. It's probably Oscar trying to get involved here. Not a surprise. Not a surprise.
Yeah, they say it's probably Oscar. I go, it is.
Hello, Oscar. But Jose, we'll begin with you before you get booted out of there. In the end, Jan Blachowicz gets a third-round TKO victory over Alexander Rakic in the main event. We'll talk more about the fight, but unfortunate ending to a pretty fun fight. Just your thoughts on the main event, how it ended, and seeing Jan Blachowicz get back in the win column.
I mean, it's always disappointing when anyone gets... It always feels bad when you see someone injure themselves and like they lose a fight that they were, because let's not like mess around with it. Rakic was not only in that fight, I had a 1-1 after two, and then he hurt his knee. So it's just super unfortunate, A, because Rakic is still such a young fighter. He's in the prime of his career. You always hear like because he's going to get his MCL and LCL checked out on Monday. So fingers crossed it's nothing too severe, but that looked gnarly. When you can physically see your knee ligament snap in half, it's probably not a good sign, but just super unfortunate all around. I know Jan is disappointed that he's happy that he won, but he's disappointed that that's how it ended, and all very humble in defeat. Rakic was, he went up to Jan and congratulated him, and Jan said, you'll be champion eventually, but it's just disappointing that a fighter of Alexander Rakic's age and standing in the division hurt his knee so badly, because he might not come back for 2 years. And we always say the light heavyweight division is so shallow, and losing someone of his caliber is definitely a huge blow.
Did they give any sort of an update on, because I know he wasn't at the press conference, but was there any update provided from anybody from the UFC about
just
his condition?
Just the UFC PR came and said that he's going to get an MRI on Monday for his LCL and MCL. And that's as far as we know. I assume place isn't open tomorrow, it's Sunday, or he's going to heal up for a bit and rehydrate and then go into it. But yeah, we won't know till Monday.
Now, I know you're not a giant fan of playing matchmaker, but we did have the champion, Glover Teixeira, tweet out before this all began, this whole card, that, hey, if I win and you win, we'll just run this back, Jan. And Jan obviously is not going to be upset about seeing a tweet from the champion. Obviously, Glover's got a tough task ahead of him fighting a madman in Jiří Procházka. But if he does get the job done and beats Jiří, what are the chances they run this one back, in your opinion?
I mean, higher than I thought. I didn't think, I mean, I was going to say if Ratchikin won, he'd probably deserve the number one contender spot. Obviously, Ankalaev and Anthony Smith's coming up. But if you just go by rankings, I mean, Jan Blachowicz is still the number one ranked light heavyweight under the champion in the UFC's rankings, where they kind of try to use it for matchmaking purposes. So before this fight, I said Jan's probably maybe one, maybe probably two wins away, considering he got finished by the current champion. And I always said if Glover does beat Jiří and then retires, I would assume it'd be Jan versus fill in the blank for the vacant title. But since the title's not vacant, and Glover tweeted that, I think it's probably 75% chance, 75-80% chance that happens, because for all we know, Glover Teixeira gets really hurt, because as we just saw today, when you fight Jan Blachowicz, your knees can blow out. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But if Glover Teixeira wins, I would assume that fight is going to happen maybe by the end of the year, just especially if someone, the champion, tweets it.
Two last things, just to give us a vibe from what happened back there. I know there are fighters coming in and out talking about their victories and everything, but what fight, what moments got the media room all fired up tonight?
The David Grant knockout was pretty jarring. He basically punched a hole through Lou Smoke's head on the canvas. So that was a pretty jarring moment. The Manuel knockout, what's Manuel's last name? Manuel Torres. That was a pretty jarring one, just considering it was like a 1-2, and then he didn't even follow. He even said himself, he's like, I didn't know if I should follow up. He's kind of a black belt. I don't want to hurt him anymore, this and that. And then, like, who would have thought Kalen Chookagian getting fight of the night? I mean, we all joked 30-27 Kalen Chookagian. That was a fun scrap. The Vivian Araújo getting head kicked by Andrea Lee in the first round and then surviving was a pretty spectacular moment. So pretty great night all around in terms of, like, exciting finishes and fights, and the ladies put on some pretty fantastic performances. So all in all, pretty fun fight card, I'm not going to lie.
Usually when there's a pretty talked about rotten moment of the night, it always sort of balances out with a delightful moment. I think we know the rotten moment we're talking about with Tony Kelly in the cornering, but you got to actually speak with Tetsuro Taira for the very first time, a delightful young man. And have you ever gotten a reaction from a fighter just explaining the secret menu at In-N-Out?
Never.
Because that kid was so excited.
Never for a fighter, but it's always like I've had other friends from other countries come in. I take them in and out, and I'm like, there's a secret menu. They're like, what? What's that? What's the secret menu? So Ira definitely responded like, well, how old is he? 21, 22 years old, if that? Definitely responded like a 22-year-old who has been cutting weight, who just got told he could get, quote-unquote, animal-style French fries with a burger with three patties. So I don't expect Tetsuya Taira to be anywhere close to 125 pounds by this time next week.
There you go. Jose, I know you're about to get the boot, but thank you for checking in. I know it's been a long night for you, so I appreciate it, my man. Enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll see you probably next week, I'm sure.
Hasta luego, gentlemen.
Thanks, Jose.
There he is, everybody. Jose Young's coming on in and giving a quick recap. I know he's got to get out of there, and when it's time to go, they don't just say, okay, you got to go, and then, because you know what happens when they tell you you got to go. You're like, okay, but you have to try to squeeze in like two or three last things. Now, the UFC just shuts off the Wi-Fi and makes sure you're getting not out of there. So, AK, you're looking dapper. You're looking like you're about to play a Sunday round at the Masters.
It's more of a bowling, I think. But, yeah, I mean, obviously golf, yeah. But I really look at it as like a bowling shirt.
Yes. Kingpin 101 from Alexander Kaylee. Your thoughts on the main event? Jan Blachowicz gets it done. Not the way he would have liked it, and a lot of people watching would have liked it, but in the end he landed the leg kick, and those leg kicks are really effective. It was unfortunate the other leg that he put the weight on that sort of collapsed him and brought him down to the canvas. But just your thoughts on Jan's performance, especially that first round. I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, I think a lot of the comments I saw were like, he's really came to fight tonight, which sounds like a weird thing to say about like a guy who was just the UFC champion in his most recent fight. But I think a lot of people were kind of discouraged by what happened with the Teixeira matchup. Not just that, obviously he was outclassed on the ground. You know, he was facing a superior grappler, but you know, he didn't seem to have that Polish power verve that so many people see. And he commented on that after the fight. He was kind of asked about it, and he was just like, "Yeah, like I felt more relaxed. I was having fun." And I think you could see that in his performance. I think a loose and sort of relaxed Blachowicz is the best version of him. That's the version that I think that got him to the title, his first title opportunity, that got him the title win. And got him as the win over Adesanya. So we saw some of that tonight. And would that have carried through like for the whole fight and gotten him the win? Unclear, because you know Rockets was fighting really well too before the injury. But I think it's definitely for some of us, including myself, who was kind of counting I was counting Jan Błachowicz out a little bit, as I have many times in the past. This is, I think, the sixth time in his past seven fights that I have picked a fight wrong. I picked him to lose many times, and I picked him to beat Teixeira, so it was all just, it's all incorrect. I picked him to lose to Rakic tonight, so another L for this guy. But listen, he turned 39 in February. Yeah, his best years are probably behind him, but he's still clearly more than good enough to be competitive with anyone in the top 10 of the light heavyweight division. And I guess the question now is, and I see a lot of people asking it in the comments and on social media, how close is he to getting another shot at a title, whether it's against Teixeira or Prochka? And I don't know. I'm kind of mulling it over myself.
Yes, of course, we will match make tomorrow on to the next one, and we'll make that decision. But I assume there's a poll with such a topic.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Straight up, people asking, did he do enough? Did he do enough tonight to earn a UFC title shot, regardless of who wins at UFC 275? Very strong right now. 64%. Yes. So most people are like, yeah, like you said, they saw at least enough in the first round, and had ended with an injury, but it was competitive enough that they see enough of the Jan Błachowicz of old, of the championship Jan, that if he got a title shot tomorrow, or is announced that it was, you know, announced this week, he'd be getting a title shot. Doesn't sound like too many people would complain.
Yeah, I mean, we also have to keep in mind that there is a very big fight in this division coming up at UFC 277, July 30th in Dallas, between Anthony Smith and Magomed Ankalaev. And you would think if Ankalaev wins, he's either in there or they're going to do another number one contender fight. Plus, if Anthony Smith wins, people love Anthony Smith. There's a very good chance he gets up there because, I mean, he gets the chance to run that back with Glover because that was a bad loss for him. One of those things. And then he turned it around not long after that. He took another loss, but all of a sudden he's on a tear again. And Anthony Smith versus Jiří Procházka is probably just going to be insanity until it ends, should that happen. But we already know what's going to happen. Glover Teixeira is going to take Jiří down and he's going to submit him in the first round. I've been saying this for like 7 months now. Come on now.
Anthony Smith tweeted after. He said, looks like I'm going to upset a couple of guys pretty soon. So he thinks, I think he's amused by all the contender talk. And he's kind of like, well, don't forget about me. Don't forget about me. I'm here. Like you said, I have the Ankalaev fight. That fight is, that's certainly a winnable fight for Anthony Smith. I mean, I think Ankalaev, I'm sure this odds already, probably at least a 2-1, minus 250, maybe close to 3-1 favorite. But man, Anthony Smith has been down in the odds before, and he's beaten a lot of guys. So I'm certainly leaning towards Ankalaev, but an Anthony Smith win would not shock me in the slightest.
Of course, Ryan Spann got a submission win, light heavyweight division, against Iwan Kuchalaba, and that brings up a question from Jordan Isle. Bonuses, which Jordan, are kind of surprising.
Jordan, did I not just answer this question in the comments? Like, I swear I just told him.
But, you know, there's a lot of comments here.
It might have been someone else. I apologize. So if it wasn't Jordan, I was nearly certain that I told him. It was. It's the same person. Anyway, you're right. For anyone else just tuning in, Amanda Ribas, Kaitlyn Chookagian, fight of the night. Kaitlyn Chookagian, fight of the night, Mike. I know.
It was a good fight. It was the most entertaining Kaitlyn Chookagian fight ever. No doubt about it.
Clearly. And then Ryan Spann and Manuel Torres. Performance bonuses. But Chookagian, 6 years in to her UFC career, Mike, the most appearances in UFC women's flyweight history, her first ever fight of the night or a fight night bonus of any kind.
So on the People's Pre-Fight Show, me and Jed played the bonus prediction game. We both got Manuel Torres correct. I said Davey Grant was going to get a performance bonus and fight of the night.
Yeah,
which he had a very good case of getting both of those, and he got none of them. He got none of them, AK. I think this is a travesty, and Michael Johnson didn't get a bonus either.
I like Ryan Spann, and good for him. Yeah, again, I never want to take bonuses away from anyone. I never want to say someone doesn't deserve a bonus because, you know, it's great. He's got a great guillotine. He used it to take out a very dangerous light heavyweight tonight. But, boy, I definitely would have ranked the Michael Johnson finish and the Davey Grant finish above. And Davey Grant and Smoke Up for sure should have been the fight of the night. It was strange. And again, I don't want to take away from Kibas and Chookagian either. Fun, competitive fight. Well deserving of some sort of bonus. Again, this is why there shouldn't be a four bonus limit. All these people should get $50,000. It does leave a bad taste in my mouth, and I think a lot of the viewers, to not see Davey Grant or Luis Smoka receive a well deserved bonus.
David Grant showed up to the freaking press conference with his gloves still on. That just shows the kind of guy he is. He's ready to keep on going. Still had his 4 ounce gloves on. Like he was ready to go, all beat up. It's just absolutely crazy.
Brandon Hahn saying Petrosky. That's right. But he choked out. Maximov's? Maximov was like a 2-1 favorite, right?
Maximov was the biggest favorite on the card.
Even what were the odds? No, I got to look at this.
It was like -380.
What? Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Because I think they looked at it as if Petrosky was going to get a finish, he was going to get it early, and they felt like Maximov's grappling would be enough to ride him through a first round, because Petrosky fades down the stretch and Maximov gets better and has an insane gas tank and has that chain wrestling takedown. But geez, Luis, well done by Petrosky. Saw an opening, got it done, and proved a lot of people wrong. Yes, Callum. It's not just us. He made everybody eat their own words, because everybody bet on Nick Maximov, which is why the line was so high, except for a couple of people. A couple people were smart.
I'm so disappointed in myself. All my toughies out there, I picked Maximov by decision. I'm embarrassed. I'm one of the only people in the world who watched the Ultimate Fighter 29. And yes, Petrosky was very disappointing on that show. He lost in the first round. He was one of the favorites going into it, and just kind of dropped a stink bomb on the actual show. But going into it, again, people knew about his grappling. He's has the billing of a strong grappler. They talked about it on the broadcast. They said this is a great grappler versus grappler matchup. Like you said, Mike, maybe Maximov viewed as having the deeper gas tank. I think we've discussed internally, there's that Diaz bump. He's part of the Diaz army, and people like that. People see that and think, oh, maybe he's from the same stuff. And maybe he still will be. This is not the end for Nick Maximov. His career is just starting. We may look back on this.
He's 24.
He's 24.
Just
right?
getting started.
Yeah, very talented guy. We may look back on this as a blip, but Petrosky was definitely overlooked, and good for him for clearly winning the grappling battle in the 76 seconds or whatever this fight lasted, and man, choking him right out. But hey, listen, Nate Diaz will be happy, and Nate and Nick will be happy. Their man did not tap.
I love the call out as well of Gerald Meerschaert. I thought that was great. I think Gerald Meerschaert, hilarious response to it, because he called for it for the Singapore card, and Meerschaert's like, yeah, dude, I'm down, but like, can we push it back a little more? Because I'm pretty fat right now. So we're not going to do that. So we mentioned the co-main event, Ryan Spann back in the win column. No, I would assume, I thought he was getting on the mic and say, hey, we're going to Dallas. I want to be on that card. But he says, not even thinking about that. He wants to get his mental straight, wants to hang out with his family, and then he'll talk about the next move. So we'll see what happens with him. But more on the Chukagian-Amanda Ribas fight, because it was a fun fight. We weren't sure what Amanda was going to look like against literally like the gatekeeper to the championship in this division. Caitlin Chukagian just beats everybody but the champion, anybody but the best fighters in this division, and she's just knocking off these contenders. You want to get a title shot, you got to beat Caitlin Chukagian. Amanda Ribas gave her everything she could handle. She looked good at 125. I'm seeing a few of these. I've seen it on Twitter. A lot of different scoring.
Yeah.
Did the judges get this right, in your opinion?
I think they did. I would have given the first two rounds to Chukagian. It's not a terrible to score the fight for Ribas at all. I get it. She had a lot. Look, her jiu-jitsu is amazing. She had a lot of great ground control. She took down Chukagian a lot, something that I didn't think was going to happen. I said Chukagian has fought strong grapplers in the past, and they have not managed to control her on the ground. And Ribas clearly had moments where she was winning the fight in the ground. So that was great. But I don't think it was enough to outdo any time they were standing. Again, Ribas had some moments, but I think if people go back and watch that fight, Chukagian won the majority of the striking exchanges. And guys, look at the criteria. Look at the official scoring, please. Check out Sean Sheehan's pinned tweet. If you don't want to read it, he has a helpful video that he has pinned where he talks about the scoring. And I'm not saying his word is law, but I'm saying I think he does a very good job of explaining why fights are scored the way they are now. So striking is always an immediate damage, guys, is what takes priority. It's supposed to take priority for the judges. Chukagian did more damage on the feet. Should the criteria be changed to be, more suitable for MMA? Maybe someday. Maybe we should get to a point where we're rewarding, where the judges should reward position and, like you said, more like ground control and grappling dominance and give more points for that. Maybe that is more suitable for MMA. But the way the scoring is now, if you are winning the striking for the majority of the fight, you are probably going to win the decision. That is what happened tonight. I think a Ribas score, I don't think out of the question at all. but I would have scored the first two rounds for Chookagian. So that's where you get your 29-28. So I don't have any issue with it.
I scored it for Chookagian. It was close. I knew we were going to a split decision. I knew it. I
even
tweeted
it.
I tweeted it like midway through the second round. We're going to split decision city. We took a one-way trip. We knew it was coming, and death taxes. Caitlin Chookagian by decision scores once again. She gets it done. I thought the judges got it right. And it's amazing the arguments people had on Twitter from the Bellator card. Ugh. You know, the Logan Storley MVP fight, and then people dying on this hill. And I couldn't wait to fire back at people who were giving me crap for the MVP scorecard yesterday. But it doesn't matter. I love this comment. How does Dominic Cruz still not have a score? John Anik and Brendan Fitzgerald are the only ones in these broadcasts that know how to score fights. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Dom has his own way. Well, like I said, Dom might be like kind of what I'm saying. He has his own perception of health, which is funny because he was kind of like a very tricky stand-up fighter during his time and won with a lot of I think he was a very effective striker, but you definitely had fans who were like, oh man, how much damage is Dom really doing when he's kind of like zipping in and out and da-da. I always thought he was doing great. But it's funny that he doesn't know the criteria when his fighting style was actually perfect for winning under the criteria of a mixed martial arts fight. So I don't know. It is weird.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. Manuel Torres, great performance against just the nicest guy in the world. I hate seeing Frank Camacho go out like that. Oh. He's just such a good dude. Alan Nascimento,
we all knew Frank Camacho was going to come out right away just swinging. I tweeted him like, if there was any game plan for this fight, you know, as soon as that bell rings, Frank Camacho's like, nah, I'm just going to come forward and I'm going to punch. He has to. It's been 2 years since he's been in the cage. He's like, he's just like, I got to go. I got to do it my way. Like, I just got to go in and talk about going out in your shield. He always does it.
We get Viviani Aru, or Nascimento gets the win. Viviani Arujo, fun fight with Andrew Lee. Of course, we're not going to remember the fight itself. We're going to remember the moment that happened between the first and second round with Tony Kelly. We're not going to really get into that here, but not great. Michael Johnson gets a win. AK, you came through, buddy. You sold that fight. Somebody has to win.
It's a good fight, too.
And somebody won. It was close.
That's a good fight, right? That's a good fight.
Yeah. I thought Patrick was going to score that submission win for me, but did not happen.
Man, and Michael Johnson, I can only imagine what's going through his mind. I didn't watch the whole post-fight press conference. I don't know if he went into great detail exactly what his struggles are. Just kind of mentioning like going to a dark place. And again, that he hasn't won a fight in 4 years, hasn't won at lightweight in 6 years, you guys can draw your own conclusions by what he means went to a dark place. I would imagine, you know, that's a tough spot to be in. He's only, I think in his career, he's like 3 fights over 500. So it's tough, man, to keep climbing that hill. It's not like he's losing decisions all the time too. Like he lost some, you know, he had some tough losses, tough finish losses too. So good for him. Good for him, man, for sticking with it and for reaping the rewards. Again, I hope he gets some sort of locker room bonus, maybe not the full 50 Gs, but you know, pay this man some good money because he could have retired. You know, a lot of people would have retired or I don't know, found a way to get out, maybe get away from the UFC, maybe not want to fight UFC level competition anymore. And he came back tonight and credit to, again, Alan Patrick as well, because he's also hasn't won in a while. And hopefully his turn comes next.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR and legal, can stay connected and move together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Verna Jandaroba, nice performance. Angel Hill, just ridiculously tough getting out of those grappling exchanges. Tetsuro Taira, good debut. I think it's the kind of fight he's going to grow a lot from, because like I told everybody since this fight was booked, Carlos Candelario is not a guy who's just going to get run over tonight. He's a very gritty, tough dude. He could take a beating, and he's scrappy as hell. Taira goes the full 15, gets a clear win, nicely done. And then Petrosky kicked off the card with a huge upset against Nick Maximov. So if you guys got questions, let's get after it. We're only going to go for probably another 10 or 15 minutes at the most. So if you got thoughts on this, if this car was in front of 20,000 fans, would Amanda Ribas had won? I think people wanted her win so she could challenge Valentina or Tyla. Caitlin's a difficult spot at 125. Yeah, Caitlin is in a difficult spot, and she knows she's in a difficult spot. That's why she called out multiple people at the end. She called out Misha Tate. She called out the French chick. And Alexa Grasso as well. So well done. That's exactly how you got to do it. Angel Hill's 12th UFC loss is the most in UFC women's MMA history. Unlucky, or is that who she really is, AK?
Wow, this is a complicated question. Okay, well, a little bit unlucky. I've called her the robbery review queen. I don't think all the split decisions that she lost were robberies, but that she keeps ending up in these situations where she has the potential to lose a robbery is unfortunate. But it's also indicative of her fighting style. She doesn't have like big knockout power. She never has. Very solid striker, very good striker, but someone who you wish she had that extra gear, if not just to finish people, but just to score a few more knockdowns. It sounds insulting to say almost, but to make things a little more obvious for the judges, sometimes it's what you have to do, because it sucks, because she definitely won some of those fights that were scored against her, and I wish the judges were able to parse her work a little better. But I mean, that's just not how it is. And as far as like how many losses, again, we talked about, I think we talked about on the preview show, she only had one pro fight before coming to the UFC. So for her to have I think she's 8-12 now. I know it looks bad at 8-12 in the UFC, but she has fought everyone. She has fought everyone in her division. She's fought some amazing, really, really talented names. Michelle Waterson, Claudia Gadelha, Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas, Tisha Torres. You're going to pick up L's when you fight these people. That's just how it is. And if she had a much easier schedule, we could be talking about, Angela Hills is 12-6 in the UFC, or 14-4 or something. She's fought the best of the best and hasn't been able to get a lot over that hump a lot of the time. And sometimes she did, and the scores didn't go her way. So in a way, to answer the question, yeah, it is who she is. But the story of her record tells you how tough her competition is, not like necessarily that she's not a great fighter.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. There are certain fights that she thought were robberies that weren't robberies, and there were probably certain fights that were. So I think it's a combination of both, but she's still very talented, and she's tough as hell, and she's a fun fighter. So always good to have somebody like that around who's willing to fight anybody, anytime. Dana White loves those folks, and I'm sure Angel Hill is pretty high on the old list. Do you think Jed is kicking himself for not betting on Ryan Spann? Probably.
Yeah, but anytime, again, you remember that matchup was made for chaos. I mean, yep. They threw Ryan Spann and Kuchelaba in there. Kucherov, I mean, could have knocked Ryan Spann out in the first round. You know what I mean? But he's a super aggressive guy. He went right into Ryan Spann's strength. One of his signature moves, guillotine choke. I don't think he's... I think this is the first time he... You know, he has one other in the UFC, right?
I think he has another.
I want to say... I'll take a quick look here. Because it used to be a move he used a ton. Yeah, yeah. Devin Clark. He submitted Clark with a guillotine. And Emiliano Sordi, PFL champion Emiliano Sordi on Contender Series. And before that, he had a ton of guillotine chokes. So he used to do it all the time. He just hasn't had one in a while. But I'm like, Kucherov is exactly the kind of guy who's going to fall into it. So, but I don't blame Jen for not betting on it. Again, that matchup was chaos. That's like a stay away for sure.
That's what's great about having a podcast, because if you say something and you put it out in the world, you have to stand by what you say. So if you say, like, I'm just not going to bet on it, then you can't bet on it. Interesting question, because Holly Holm is headlining next week's card. Is Caitlin Chookagian the Holly Holm of 125? I'll let you go first before I mean,
no, for a couple of reasons. Holly Holm won the title. I mean, she won the title, and she has a signature moment. That, I mean, look, that knockout of Ronda Rousey feels like it happened like 25 years ago now, but it's still replayed to this day. She's still viewed as the woman who you know, blew up the Ronda Rousey hype, who did the unthinkable. And now that we look back on it, maybe not as unthinkable, but Caitlin is missing that moment. If you're asking, is that where they are now? No, because Holly Holm always feels like she's one win away from a title shot. Caitlin feels like she's, as Mike says, 10 wins away from a title shot.
Yeah, that's the answer right there. She's not the Holly Holm 125, because if Holly Holm is at 125, she would have got 8 title shots already against Valentina Shevchenko. We'd be talking about, if Holly Holm won next week, would she get a 9th crack at Valentina? Like, that's what we'd be talking about. Caitlin is not in that position. She's eventually going to get there, but she's going to have to win like 5 more fights before that happens, or Valentina is going to have to vacate the title and go up to 135, because that fight was not competitive for even one second. So, yeah. You guys haven't brought up Nascimento's stupendous performance. Thoughts? Let me just say this. The only people happier with that performance besides Nascimento and his family and his corners were Sean Shelby and McMaynard. Those two were probably as happy, if not happier, than anybody else. And I think they knew something with this matchup. I think they had a feeling about how this fight would go. And I think in the end, they might have snuck to the back room, given each other a high five, and then went back to sit down. Your
Mike,
thoughts?
Michael, are you suggesting the matchmakers would do something to mess with a debuting fighter that perhaps they're not fond of, that did not make a great impression on them when he met them during the Contender Series?
It was a wise decision, because they picked a guy that maybe the betting lines would look favorably towards Hadley, but they knew deep down, because of their matchmaking prowess, that they had a good chance to hand Jake Hadley his first L, and that's exactly what happened. That was a great performance,
wow,
too.
I can't believe you'd think they would do that. I don't think McMaynard and Sean Shelby would do that, but they certainly could if they wanted to.
I mean, yeah. Let's see.
Oh, I saw
Michael,
that.
Did Michael Johnson earn himself a fight with Tony Ferguson, AK?
Why not, right? Why not? He beat him, you know? Is this not a fight that Tony Ferguson would like to have back? How long ago are we talking about here? How long ago was that first fight?
That was a while ago.
10
years ago?
Years ago. This month. May 5th, 2012. That was Tony Ferguson's first UFC loss, right? I'm not crazy, right? Tony was you know, he won The Ultimate Fighter, and he was kind of running through people, right?
Was that was the last loss before he went on the run, right?
It was. That's right. So he beat Aaron Riley. He beats Eves Edwards. And then, Michael Johnson wins a decision over him. And then and after that, Tony Ferguson goes in his 12 fight win streak. So I think that's actually pretty cool. I don't remember this coming up at all on last week's Otno, but I have a feeling some people will be suggesting it this week.
I would agree. Let's see. Luke Adam, is Sanford MMA leading the discussion for the best MMA gym this year? Interesting question.
Elevation took a hit with the Gaethje and Namajunas losses, that's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, trying to think. I mean, Logan Storley just won a title. Mm-hmm. Michael Chandler's there. I mean, they got Gilbert Burns, but I don't think anyone really thinks Gilbert Burns is a loser in that situation.
Fortis still doing pretty well.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to like go back and think of like which gym had which fighters, because like these fighters switch gyms all the time. Like even Davey Graham was representing Syndicate MMA tonight, so these fighters change hands all the time. Let's see what else we have here for questions. What happened to Dana? Why was he at the press? When is the last time you see Dana White at a fight night press conference? Very rare.
Yeah, I wouldn't look into it.
He's coming off a pay-per-view. He's doing what guys with billions of dollars in their bank accounts do. They're traveling. He's on a yacht somewhere. I don't know. Do you guys think that Bisping's commentary is hard to listen to? There's a lot of talk about the commentary. I think more from Dominic Cruz tonight. Dominic Cruz is actually pretty solid when it comes to position and technique. I think he's really good at explaining how to get out of tight spots and what fighters need to do and seeing advantages, because he's good at like studying tape. So he knows tendencies of these fighters, even the newcomers. He's well aware of what these guys do. He studies really hard. He has no clue how to score a fight at all, especially in today's MMA. But maybe we're being a little too hard on these guys. I don't know, because they've been doing this for so long and they're so used to a certain thing that it just hasn't caught on. And when you ride a certain bike for a long time and then you switch to a different bike, yeah, it does the same thing. And this is the cool thing now, but you're so used to riding this other bike that it just doesn't feel the same. So maybe we're a little hard on them. Maybe it's a positive spin on it, but just Bisping tonight in general. Were you a fan of his commentary? Do you think he's hard to listen to, as Skinny Boy seems to maybe think he is?
I wasn't paying that close to the commentary today. I'll be honest with you. I saw people mentioning on social media they had some issue with it. I'm a fan of his. I do think, I don't know. I'm a fan. I don't know. I was about to search for criticism there, but I like Bisping. I see someone saying he's the worst commentator. I don't know if there's any commentator that's like universally loved besides John Anik. I guess John Anik, people like him a lot. But Dom Cruz, Bisping, Cormier, Paul Felder, I think most people like. I just don't know if they put him on the level of, you know, some of the guys they really love. They're all going to take their criticism for various reasons. They have biases, they have misconceptions, they have, you know, things that happened in their own career that color how they view fights. Mike, are you watching the show Winning Time? Are you watching the Lakers?
No, I watched it.
So there's a little subplot in there with Chick Hearn, legendary Lakers announcer Chick Hearn. When he starts doing commentary, he has Pat Riley with him, doing Pat Riley before he became the coach of the Lakers. He's brought in as like a color commentator. And back then, Chick Hearn had like, I mean, this is according to the show, I don't know the truth, but Chick Hearn had like so much power that he essentially did all the talking. And every now and then he'd let Pat Riley talk for like 30 seconds. And I almost wish veteran broadcasters could have that kind of generalmanship in the UFC. Obviously you can't, because guys like Dominic Cruz and Michael Bisping are much bigger stars than like a Brendan Fitzgerald. Brendan Fitzgerald cannot tell those. He's there to kind of guide them along and let them do their thing. He's not there to tell them when they should and shouldn't talk. That's just not Brendan Fitzgerald's responsibility. But I think there was a time when the person who was the trained broadcaster, who was the veteran broadcaster, would be kind of trusted to keep the guys in line, and you just don't have that option. But and then I think that's why guys like Cruz are, I don't want to say this is who he's going to be for the rest of his broadcasting career, but I mean, keep in mind, he's not a trained broadcaster. And I think he's very much the same guy he was when he started doing this job. What is it? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, however long he's been doing it. Brilliant technical mind. You want to throw to him to break something down. I mean, there's few better, but as far as keeping like a consistent, like smooth broadcast goes, he's just not great at it. He's going to cause these little like awkward moments and conflicts, and that's how it is. And then you have add in the chaos of a three-man booth. It just doesn't always come off well for any of the guys. So I don't think Bisping's particularly bad. I'm not a fan of Cruz, but I don't know. Yeah, I didn't notice anything egregious tonight, but like I said, I wasn't paying as close attention as some.
I would like to see them mix some faces around. I'd like to see more Paul Felder. I think he's really good. I would like to see Michael Chiesa in there to do some color. He does a great job for LFA. Anthony Smith, I think, would be really good in the color spot. Laura Sanko, of course, would be great
in the color spot. Who has fought professionally, still trains, does technique breakdowns, and has a trained broadcaster. this is again, I know it's a skill you can learn on the fly. There's a lot of great former, you know, athletes who have become great broadcasters in other sports without, I think, I assume without having to go through journalism school or broadcasting school. But it's great if you do go through broadcasting school, and Laura Senko has that kind of experience. Again, I don't know what her schooling is, but she has really, really worked her way up as a broadcaster and was not thrown, you know, when she finally gets her shot at being a UFC, at that UFC desk, it'll have been well earned, and she'll have gone, she'll have made all the mistakes that broadcasters make like 100 times way before she's actually on national television. So Laura Senko, let's get her on that desk, please.
Yeah, get her in the mix for the love
of God. Come on.
Any hype for Parker Porter next week? Apparently not, because this fight with Gelson Almeida is not on the main card, which is just god awful.
It's a weird fight.
It is a weird fight, but
it's fun.
Parker's a massive underdog. He's like a plus 500 dog or something like that. But don't sleep on Parker Porter. Any idea for when the UFC comes back to New York? I can say with knowledge that the July 30th card was being discussed for MSG. That was on the list. There are a lot of cities on that list. Boston was one of those cities on that list. MSG was on that list. Dallas was on that list. Dallas looks to have won the pony, so to speak. If I had to guess, I would say November.
Yeah, that's the New York. Yeah, that's the Madison Square Garden month, right? It's November, right? They've held a bunch of it.
That would be my guess. I'm going to try to find a couple more here. Sometimes the thing just bounces around. Where is Jose? He's gone.
He's still on site in Las Vegas. Someone just mentioned like Fox just signed Tom Brady for $375 million. I'm like, yeah. I mean, look, he's a famous face and voice that people want to hear. Is Tom Brady going to be good at broadcasting? We'll find out. I don't think he's going to be as much of a natural as Tony Romo, who himself had a lot of bumps his first season doing commentary. But yeah, but that's actually a perfect example, guys. Like, I want to see how Tom Brady does, and like we'll see. Like, man, is he actually good, or should he not have some more training first?
Tristan, I see the Petrosky question. We talked about it, but Luke M asks, maybe we'll end here. Best fight of the week / weekend, AK.
Oh, Bellator had some moments, eh?
They did.
Bellator had some moments. Let me take a quick look at the, I'm sorry, it's going to sound terrible because I just need to look at the card again because everything's a blur now. Certainly not the Bellator 21 main event, which was somewhat interesting to watch, but was not a great fight by any means. I mean, I want to say Davy Grant and Luis Smoka. Am I forgetting some barn burner from 281?
I mean, the best moment of the weekend was Paul Daly for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fight prior to that moment was not great. It was like the anti Paul Daly fight. It was like the exact thing you didn't. It was turning out to be a classic Bellator move where you have him in a position where he's going to fight a striker and the chips will fall where they may. But instead you put him in there with a grappler and the guy just takes him down and lays on him and grapples with Paul Daly for almost two full rounds before Daly just said the hell with this and just knocked his ass out. And we had that great moment, but yeah, I mean, there was the Bellator card had some good moments. That's for sure. We had the freaking buggy choke. We had all sorts of craziness. We had some sad moments too with Leon Machida getting knocked out.
That fight didn't happen. I don't know what you're talking about. Leon Machida retired like 3 years ago.
And then just an awful main event,
stinker.
And it was so bad of a stinker that people tried to find ways to make it a talking point. So everyone just attacked everybody for their scoring on social media. And that, then 40 minutes later, not one peep about the fight again. That is hilarious how much that fight that fizzled out.
Ruined friendships. Scoring that fight hurt people's feelings. Like people got mad. We're getting mad at each other on social media. Like I saw like people are getting real. I tried to kind of stay out of it. Like I kind of just put my score. I was like 48, 47 page. And I'm like, I'm not getting involved in this, like this discourse. Cause it was getting nasty.
Yeah. People were like, oh man, you stop dealing with the criteria, man. Like that's not how they score fights. I'm like, that's exactly how they score fights. You're telling me I shouldn't focus on how their fights are actually scored. I don't understand your question. Maybe we'll take a couple more. Any chance Dustin Poirier fights in the July 30th card? He certainly wants to. He has called out literally everybody. So if you had a guess, AK, is he fighting July 30th?
Yes, he is. That's it. No scoop, no inside information. I'm just being super optimistic, and I think he gets an opponent.
I think he gets an opponent as well. I think they might go for that. I think they might actually party with the Wonder Boy idea. I think that that would make some sense. I mean, why not? You got two names, two guys that really are just kind of stuck right now. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
I love that.
That's a good idea.
I see an NBA question. I'll read this one real quick. Or NBA draft question. Callum Lambert asking, is Chet Holmgren going to go number one? Let me just say, I think the draft lottery is in three. Is this week? I think on Tuesday of this week. So ask me again. Ask me again, because it's going to be very team dependent. It's a top three draft. It's like the three. There's three very clear four guys of the draft coming up. But Chet Holmgren, freakish talent. Love him. But Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, also fantastic. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't decided yet. It depends who is drafting number one.
And I agree on that. Like, why didn't you just do the Nate fight? I mean, I know why, but just stop being dumb.
Why doesn't Nate fight anyone? Just Nate fight someone. Actually, he doesn't have
to. He wants to.
He wants to. He keeps saying he wants to. He's not doing it.
Well, it's not his fault. I mean, from what I understand, it's not his fault. He wants to fight, but the UFC wants him to fight more than this one time, and he doesn't want to do that, and thus here we are. In that same position. Poirier versus Bilal, nah, not into it.
I don't see, yeah, I don't know. Did Bilal volunteer for that? Did he throw his name into the hat for that?
I mean, I guess.
He would if he thought it was an option. I think he knows it's probably not. It wouldn't happen though, so.
But we'll see. I think Poirier will end up fighting on that card. But I think with that point, since we have shifted over to Dustin Poirier, I see the Andrew Lee cornerman thing. I don't really want to dive into that. I think enough has been said about it. With Tony Kelly.
Can I say one thing about it?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Guys, whatever you want to call it, racism, nationalism, just general prejudice. If you're going to, first of all, I mean, you shouldn't make weird generalizations like that anyway, but don't, like, it's so in the saying. Like, anytime, I see people going like, it wasn't racist. You know, it's just in the moment. He's just saying, it's like, guys, anytime you talk about a country or a group of people and you put the word dirty in front of it, You are being a little prejudiced. It's not going to come off well. It's not going to come off well. Are you intentionally being racist? Are you intentionally being prejudiced? I don't know. Maybe not. That's not your intention, but you have to have some. You're on national effing television. You're on. This was on the prelims, right, Mike?
This is on the prelims. This is the featured prelims.
So this is on ESPN. This is on ESPN. The featured prelim on ESPN. I get it. That's maybe not the first thing on Tony Kelly's mind. But man, you cannot say stuff like this. It's anytime you put the word dirty before a group of people, it's not even about it being taken the wrong way. It's people are taking it the right way, and they're probably getting a real view of your character. So I'm saying, guys, people just really gotta watch, you know, your language and be empathetic and think about how your words reflect on people, because that stuff is just, it sounds so bad. The clip, I had to listen to the clip a bunch of times because I was writing about it. It just sounds so bad. So Tony Kelly and whoever else says stuff like this, just do better, man. Just don't talk about people like that. Why talk about people that way?
I'll say a couple of things about this. One, I agree with everything you're saying. It was just in horrible taste. Two, Adrian Yanez is now one of the biggest baby faces on the roster because he's fighting Tony Kelly June 18th in Austin, Texas, which is very close to home for him. So he's going to not only be a baby face just because he's fighting in Texas, but he's going to be a baby face for those watching on television. It's going to be like a guy almost fighting Greg Hardy to this point. And then the third thing, after I was disgusted by everything that was said, where is the cheating? Where's the cheating? Because if you think about it, there's only one warning issued in that first round. And that warning was issued to Andrea Lee because she was going down and she grabbed the fence like full grip to keep herself up. So if anybody was towing the line of right and wrong, it was Andrea Lee, at least what I saw. Maybe there were certain things that happened. I don't think so. First of all, nothing garners that kind of response. But nothing that anybody else could see that comes that would regard cheating. But Andrea Lee certainly grabbed the fence, and that was the only moment in that first round where the referee was like, hey, don't do that. Don't do that. So I don't know. It was a horrible moment. So, and then Tony Kelly tells Andrea Lee she won the fight when it was over, which clearly was wrong because she didn't win the fight, but there you go. Viviana Araújo gets it done. She's moving up. and she's probably got a big fight coming up.
Yeah, let's focus on that. What a great performance by Viviane Araújo, and a good win for her. And we'll talk more about her on to the next one. Or we might not. That's right. I'm sorry. She was not a main card. Spoiler, I'm going to talk more about Viviane Araújo on to the next one. How about that?
Damn you, AK. You know, maybe we should both just pick her for wild cards just because she deserves it. So we can focus on positivity. But we have done our part. It's 2:21 Eastern. Next week, there's a card where the prelims start at 4 p.m. Eastern. The main card starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's a 5-fight main card, AK, and 11 fights total. I mean, we are just hitting all the sweet spots all at once. And
tonight's card was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun. So, and we had fun with all of you. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for Jose for joining us from Las Vegas. We're done. For AK, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Good night, everybody.
Media Podcast Network.